The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Alrighty, back to work after the long Thanksgiving weekend. I'm ready to go, y'all. Glad to be back. Hope you had a good time. I went to the Saints game yesterday for the first time in a while. Mike Dettillier joins us now, WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk, sat in the front row with Bob Huecker. And it's amazing how you can see everything and you can see nothing. One thing I was able to see, first of all, good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine, Tommy. Thank you.
One thing I was able to see at that level is the physicality of the game and how the Rams did out-physical the Saints. And you could, you know, I was right behind a Rams bench, and the Rams offensive line was having a pretty good time on the sideline and having a good day of it. So your thoughts on, I guess, that? We'll pick it up there.
That, to me, was the thing that jumped out the most, that the Saints got out beat up front, so to speak, and on both sides of the football. You look on defense, Jared Verse, their defensive end, first-round pick from Florida State, he was in the backfield as much as Alvin Kamara was.
As number
I mean,
eight.
Every play.
Yeah.
He was a menace there. Trevor Penning had a tough day. And then at the end, what it came down to, you know, was Verse. You know, he beat Foster Moreau off the edge and was able to get a hand and kind of tip the ball away from Derek Carr. But I just thought you lost it up front, Tommy. Rams were able to run the football over 150 yards rushing it 29 times in the game. They ran it more than they threw it. That was a surprise, because I thought it would be more of a Stafford day in trying to get pressure on him and trying to eliminate the big plays downfield. I thought in the first half they were able to do that. But they kind of took a look and say, you know what, hey, let's slow this game down, run the football, and they did it with Kyren Williams and Blake Corum.
You know, we were talking about halftime adjustments and how do you really have time to make an adjustment at halftime by the time everybody gets situated. But if you look at the time of possession, it was kind of weird because the Saints held the ball 14 minutes in the first quarter and came away with, what, 3 points, right?
Came away with 3 points, and you had opportunities. And every time you got kind of close, you know, it was something. It was penalties. Something broke down, and you had an opportunity in the first half to put up some points. You dominated the Rams in the first half. But, you know, when you don't score touchdowns and you got to come away with field goals or field goal attempts, you're not going to win a lot in this league.
Nope. Then you look at the second quarter. Rams had it 10 minutes. Saints had it 4. Third quarter, Rams had it 11 minutes. Rams had it almost 12 minutes. Saints had it 3. And then the fourth quarter, Saints had it about 11. The Rams had it about 4. So it was really a kind of odd game in terms of possession. But chunk plays hurt the Saints yesterday, too. I don't know why you don't kick the ball out of the end zone. I don't understand that. Do you?
I don't get it either, but, you know, that was one drive. I mean, it was like five plays, boom, it was over with, you know. And once they got rolling, you could tell this might be a long day for the Saints. But, again, you had an opportunity late. You could not take advantage of early, shots to get into the end zone. Come down to one play at the end, and they sort of surprised them. The Rams have played a lot of man coverage, And then they switched to the zone coverage concept on that final play. And you could see Derek Carr was looking for progressions downfield. He got to the third one, but it was just too much time there. And Verse, he's going to beat Foster Moreau 9 chances out of 10 coming off the edge like that.
When you look at the Saints receiving core as it is, when you got to kind of look up to see who these guys are, this team needs a lot of help at a lot of positions, it would seem like. Thoughts?
No question about it. Tommy, this ain't just a little bit of a, fix this and fix that. You got a lot of holes on this football team. And this all comes back to you haven't drafted well. And you had an opportunity with some early round picks to solidify some of those spots, and those guys aren't coming through for you. You got Isaiah Foskey, for example, second round pick. He plays on special teams. Mm-hmm. He was your second round pick. And that's what's happening here. It's the same thing across the defensive line board. Where are you getting beat today? They've littered with early round picks, and your best player is Carl Granderson, who's a undrafted free agent.
I'm thinking of the receiving core, and I'm thinking, well, would you really want to go into the season, no disrespect, with Marquez Valdez-Scantling, with Mason Tipton, Cedric Wilson Jr.? I don't even know who this other guy is.
Kevin Austin.
Kevin Austin, yeah. Where'd he come from?
Kevin is a former Notre Dame player. He'd been in a camp. Then he went to the UFL, and they signed him sort of late in the process. And he makes the roster. So that goes to show you, you didn't accumulate a lot of wide receiver talent in the offseason at all. MVS has really been something because you watch him play, and I saw him from college into the pros and, Green Bay, Kansas City, Buffalo. He's the same guy other than when he's with the Saints. He's a big, tall, fast receiver. He dropped, for every great catch, he dropped one. Mm-hmm. With the Saints, he's been sure-handed. And, he's a guy that, as a complimentary receiver, you'd love to have him. But you can't make him your one or two. He's got to be a complimentary guy. And right now, because of the injuries to Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed, he's now thrust into a much bigger role than I think you would have imagined had you picked him up earlier in the year.
We'll take a break, come back, talk about Taysom Hill. I was saying the young lady on the sideline, Megan Olivi, Tim tells me is her name, was very nice and even turned the monitor around for me to see what happened to Taysom Hill. That did not look good at all, and she told me that Fox chose not to show it because it was too gruesome, but I did get to see it on the monitor, and it did not look good at all. Sal Tavares went down. The way they got the cart out so quick, I got to believe that's a somewhat serious injury. So we'll look ahead to the rest of the season. You got any questions and comments, 504-260-1870. I guess, I know Darren Rizzi said that they can still win the division, and I guess they can, but, boy, yesterday you had a chance to pick up some ground with the Falcons losing, right? And you didn't. So we'll take a break, pick it up. We come back, 621 traffic now, WWL. 625, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Mike Dettillier. You heard he'll be second-guessing tonight at the Silver Slipper on the beach, Hancock County, Mississippi. Head out there, have some fun with them. Mike, one other thing I had a question about, a Saints receiver, Pettis, who is that?
Yeah, he was a second-round pick. I scouted him coming out of the University of Washington. Mm-hmm. And San Francisco picked him in round two. Wood jumped out, he was fast. He was a tremendous punt returner. University of Washington, good receiver. He just never developed with them and kind of bounced around the NFL. But there was some familiarity with him because of Clint Kubiak, who knew about him, mm-hmm. and they were able to bring him in. And again, he's a speed, quickness guy, can help you in the return game. He just never really pieced it together at the NFL level as a route runner. He sort of cuts them off a little bit short. you say, oh, the quarterback looks bad. No, it's him. Sometimes he runs a 10-yard route 8 yards, or sometimes he runs 113. So he has to get better in that part, either that or he'll be unemployed like he was before the Saints signed him. But he's a tremendous athlete.
So I guess what I'm saying, and I was sitting there yesterday, kind of not, I didn't scream a lot, y'all, don't get mad at me, but I was just kind of analytically watching the game, and I'm thinking, well, you know, I know injuries, everybody's got injuries, but you look at who's, and I didn't even know who half of these guys were. I'm asking you about the receivers, so it's hardly the people that you had, no disrespect at all. Man, they had some weasel behind me from Los Angeles. I don't think this kid's ever done a push-up in his life, Mike. Calling NFL players out and crapping all over NFL players. And this kid, I don't think, and talking about it, whining about his fantasy league and everything else. And, man, you talk about just, you know what I'm saying? Just great on your nerves, just calling NFL players out and their athletic ability and everything. And I was like, Junior, have you ever even tried to do a chin-up in your life? Ever? Have you ever tried to do that? I know you're captain.
Welcome.
Huh?
Welcome to my world, Tommy. Welcome to my world.
I know you run your fantasy league and everything else, but who the hell are you to call an NFL player garbage? Honestly, really, who are you? Anyway, so I'm looking at the receivers, and I'm trying to figure out who these guys are, and then it takes me back to injuries with Rashid Shaheed being hurt, Chris Olave being hurt. And then you go to the running back room, and Alvin Kamara, God bless his heart, man, that man is just, and at one point even, you know, somebody put a hit on him when he was going down, and it was, you know, acting all tough, so Alvin kind of shrugged up at him, and Alvin's playing his rear end off. This guy couldn't play any harder than he's playing. But besides him and Taysom Hill, and now Taysom Hill's injured, who's in that running back room? Jamal Williams, I don't know, is he in witness protection? What's going on with him? And Kendre Miller, I couldn't even remember where he came from. Was it TCU? It's been so long.
Yeah, he was a third-round pick from TCU, and he's eligible to come back from that four-week IR, so you'll have him. But, yeah, Tommy, it looks bad for Taysom Hill. Yeah, just watching that and seeing how he went down, and immediately you saw people kind of peeling off that pile.
Yep.
They knew it was serious.
And they were hearing something, and I presume he was yelling.
And, you know, when you see that, you know it's not good.
And the same
you
thing.
You know, it's not good at all.
Saul DeVere, too, they brought the card out very quickly for him, too.
Yeah, you hate to see it. You know, he's a guy that gives you everything he's got on every play. But, you know, the one thing God didn't give him was longevity to last in this game. He plays so hard, and he's a lot of times reckless with his body. And that leads to you getting hurt. And it happened to him in college. It's happened to him in the pros. He's had a number of injuries. He had told me the story in the 5 years he was at BYU. He had serious injuries, 3 of the 5. And one of the years he kind of missed a bitten piece of the season with an injury he fought through. So you see him go down, and you know how much he means to this football team. And he's an inspirational guy, because I think, you know, you see what he can do, and I think it kind of inspires everybody else, too. See him go down like that, and just pulls at you.
And
really,
I was talking about 41 playing as hard as he could, 7 plays as hard as he can as well, both of them. And we're talking about Alvin Kamara and his age before, remember, with signing and all of that stuff. He's 29. Taysom Hill's 34 years old.
That's true.
All right, we'll take a break. Pick it up when we come back. Mike Dettelier. Right now, time for WWL First News. 6:44, 16 till 7. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Mike Dettelier, WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk. I was at the Saints game yesterday and left disappointed, just like a lot of people did. And look, let me tell you something. I'm a big Saints fan. I was tearing down posters yesterday that people had put up, little pieces of paper saying wanted Mickey Loomis for this, and I was tearing them down because we don't need all that. I don't think that's going to accomplish anything. I was looking at it more of a standpoint of, okay, let's look at what problems we have and how do you address them. So let's go back to running back. You got Alvin Kamara plays hard as, you know what, but he's 29. You got Taysom Hill is 34. Who knows? God help him. Let's hope the injury's not career-ending or anything like that. But still, he's could be 35. Behind them, you got Jamal Williams, who's shown nothing. You got Kendre Miller, who can't get on the field, what happens with the running back situation next year, Mike?
Better go get you a couple young ones. That's all I can tell you. If you're going to run an offense, and this is the most perplexing thing entering the season, with Clint Kubiak and his history and how they run this offense, you needed kind of in bulk offensive linemen and running backs because they're going to have some wear and tear. They really built on running the football first, and it sets up the pass. And where are you short today? Running back and offensive line. The wide receiver position got wiped out, so to speak, because of injuries. The offensive line was the biggest question mark going into the season like it was the year before. And you sort of just put a little piece in place using a first-round pick on Fuaga, and that was it. Come on. If you're going to run this type of offense, you got to understand where you have to get volume. And that's at those two spots, offensive line and that running back, because they're going to take a pounding in that type of offense. You weren't prepared for it.
I'm trying to go back to who the starting five was supposed to be. It's Trevor Penning, Cesar Ruiz, Eric McCoy. Was it Patrick at left guard? That's how we went into the season or not?
Yeah, I think they really wanted Sal Devery to be the guy, and he gets hurt real early in training camp, and you don't see him again. So then it became Lucas Patrick.
And then he got hurt again. Sal Devery did yesterday.
But your main piece in the middle is not there. I think you saw it yesterday at critical times that Shane Lemieux, he's bounced around because of injuries. He can't stay healthy. He has, for the most part, been fairly healthy here. He's never played center before. Mm-hmm. Never. He's been a guard his entire career. Not having McCoy, people don't get what that center does and how he controls every aspect. Watch LSU play today. Why they don't have a running game? Look at the center and the guard. You're playing a redshirt freshman in DJ Chester at center and an 18-year-old true freshman at guard. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's where all the leakage is coming from. And so you've got your two tackles trying to help the guard out and trying to help the guy alongside of him, and it sort of makes him look bad. Center, man, it's a difficult position to play, and when you got one as good as McCoy, having him in the lineup and not having him there makes a big difference. Look what happened first 2 weeks with him there. He goes down the Philly game. The offense has never run the same. He comes back against Cleveland, plays really well, and kind of tweaks that groin again. You didn't have him yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about defensive line because, again, I was right behind the Rams bench, and you could see that they were all smiles and grins, the Rams offensive line was, because they were kind of having their way with the Saints defensive line. Thoughts?
That's true, and the Rams aren't noted for having a good offensive line.
That's the other thing.
They've had 52 pickup along there. I think this is the ninth different starting combination along the offensive line.
Because that's all I heard last week. All I heard last week was the Rams' offensive line is terrible. But it didn't look terrible yesterday.
No, and they've run through one player after another. But it didn't really matter yesterday. They got after the Saints, and they physically beat them up front. Kyren Williams, Blake Corum, they good backs. But yesterday, man, they look like all-world running backs. The Saints have got issues, have had it the last couple years, being able to stop the run right up the middle. And you can see on the sidelines, you know, Colin Saunders and all, they talking to the linebackers as though there was some confusion on exactly what set they were trying to get into. The Rams took full advantage of it. They don't care, you know, if you got injuries. You know, they got injuries too. Their deal is stop it. I give Sean McVay a lot of credit. You win a Super Bowl there with a really good football team, and then you got to dismantle it because of the salary cap, everything else, and then you lose Aaron Donald. was one of the greatest defensive players I've ever seen in the NFL, and yet he still is able to win. You got to give him a lot of credit along with his staff. They do a fantastic job squeezing every bit of the vitamin C out of the orange. Sean McVay does it. Like him or not, he's one hell of a coach in this game.
And the timeout at the end of the first half was apparently, and Darren Rizzi said this after the game, I think they had to burn two timeouts because they only had 10 people on a field for offense, which, you know, first of
okay,
all.
There, the focus is not there then.
Yeah.
Okay, if you're confused on if you should be in there or not, that's on the player. You can say, well, the coaches messed that up. No, the player got to know what he's assigned to do. You got to be smart enough to understand this is when you're in the lineup. And that was a lot of confusion toward the end, a lot.
If people are wondering why they burned the timeout there, that's why they did, because only 10 people on the field. But then again, you know, this deal where Taysom Hill, and God bless him, I hope he's okay, but when he plays quarterback, if you could put Derek Carr in motion, you may as well play with 10 men. I don't know why they do that. Why wouldn't you put an extra tight end in the game? Because you're not going to throw it to him. Everybody knows that, right? I guess Derek Carr takes a guy out there with him, so it neutralizes it.
Yeah, you pull one guy away from the box.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the times with Taysom, when he's in there running, you know where he's going.
Right.
And you sort of know kind of where that play's going to end up. Man, it's just his sure will to get through, and he makes plays. And so the one thing about once you flank him out, that you've got to have a defensive back ride with you. It sort of softens the box a little bit. But Taysom makes his own holes. And like I said, I hated to see, because once you saw people peel off that pile quickly, you knew that was a major injury.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back, talk a little LSU with Mike Dettillier, and then we'll talk more LSU with Jeff Palermo in the following hour. 6:52, 8 until 8. Traffic now, WWO. 8 until 7. All right, 6:58, couple minutes left with Mike Dettillier. Mike, they go to New York to take on the Giants. You got 5 games left. A lot of the losing streak, I think, had to do with Taysom Hill not being available. If he's not available for the rest of the season, you got Alvin Kamara, and behind him, what? That's what I'm looking at.
I think if he can stay healthy, you're going to see a lot of Kendra Miller. I don't know if he can stay healthy, but that's the guy they want to take a look at to see if he's the man for the future for them in a rotation. All this stuff about tanking and everything else. No, you fighting for your career here. You got to understand that, you know, or don't play hard. That's what they're paying me for.
Mm-hmm.
Tank. I never got that, because can I go to your workplace and say, don't do nothing, don't worry about it. The boss isn't going to pay attention to that. Yeah. You better believe he's paying attention to that.
Especially,
and all these other teams interested in you, they paying attention to how you perform in not the best of situations.
Especially
how you react to that.
At a casino where they got cameras all over the place, right? Because the eye in the sky doesn't lie. So
does not lie. That's why, you know, the Giants and the Raiders, that's who you're going to play. I mean, you should win those games, but I think if you're in New York or in Las Vegas, say, I think we can beat the Saints. You know, so it's one of those type of deals, but you're a better team than Las Vegas or the Giants at this stage. You got to take care of business.
I think Kendra Miller's career is on the line here. It's time for him to step up and show what he's got. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate your time. We'll be listening this evening as you second guess from the Silver Slipper. Starts at 4 o'clock. You can head on out there to the Bay St. Louis, join them if you want, or just listen here on WWR. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Jeff Palermo about those LSU Fighting Tigers. Acquitted themselves well against Oklahoma on Saturday night. Friday, so really not to the 70s until early next week. And maybe, who knows, maybe we'll get a little cold front or something before then. Jeff Palermo joins us now, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. How you doing, Jeff?
Doing well, Tommy. How about yourself today?
I'm doing well. If anybody ever question the toughness of Garrett Nussmeier, not that I don't think anybody ever did, but not that I don't think, but I'm just saying, man, you talk about leader, you talk about, tell me, for people that didn't see the game, tell them what I'm talking about, if you will.
Well, in the first half, Nussmeier took just a clean blindside hit. Will Campbell, as good as he is, you know, hey, not everybody makes every play. He completely whiffed on a block. And an Oklahoma defender just crushed Nussmeier, and he fell really hard on his right shoulder going in the ground, and he was in obvious pain and didn't finish that series, went into the locker room. I guess they just probably checked him out. Obviously, they did an evaluation of him there. He missed the next series. And then when he came back in, he was lights out, and he wanted to get back in that game. He told Coach Brian Kelly, there is no way you're keeping me out of this game. If I can throw the football, I'm playing. He talked about it at the end of the game, how much he bleeds purple and gold, and he wanted to be out there with the seniors to make sure that they got a win in their final game in Tiger Stadium. So an impressive performance about Garrett Nussmeier, and it goes beyond his toughness. You know, he's in a tough situation, Tommy, because he's following basically two Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks, mm-hmm. in Jaden Daniels and Joe Burrow. And I was in the stands, you know, watching the game, and in my section in particular, and I think this happens all around Tiger Stadium, and I've been to watch parties too, and I just hear how people criticize his play, and he doesn't do this, and he doesn't do that. Well, he's not Jaden Daniels. No. He's not Joe Burrow. LSU fans have become so spoiled as far as the quarterback position. And then when you watch A.J. Swan go out there, you are begging for Garrett Nussmeier to get back on the field. And when he came out there, he showed it. So
that's what I was hinting at, I think, Jeff, when I talked about questioned his toughness. Because I hear the same thing, and it's like, what are you talking about? Look at the touch that this guy has. Look at is he a little bit maybe careless with the football, or was earlier in the season?
Right.
Yes, but not now. I think if you could that would be fair criticism. But other than that, he's not. I don't understand what you want in a quarterback. I honestly don't.
Yeah, no. Obviously, he went through a little bit of a rough stretch, and again, Jaden Daniels and Joe Burrow were far from perfect in their first year as a starter. So. If Nussmeier comes back, I mean, that will be such a – and I think he will, Tommy. I think, you know, unless it just really – when he really examines it and looks at the other quarterbacks in the draft, and there's the potential – and we all know NFL teams are looking for quarterbacks, especially the bad ones, right? And so they'll draft a quarterback.
The bad teams, bad quarterbacks. There are plenty of bad
quarterbacks. Yeah, bad teams. I mean, you know, the New York Giants are going to go for the Daniel Joneses of the world, even though they're probably not ready and draft them very high in the first round. And there may be that scenario out there when he evaluates everything. But I think this is a kid that's determined to come back. And the selling point will be from Coach Brian Kelly and his staff and say, hey, look, Burrow and Daniels, yep. they had their troubles in the first year as a starter at LSU. And then look what happened in the second year. Why don't you see if you can't duplicate what they did?
Yep, and join that Heisman Club, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
I hope he does. I really do. Boy, Chris Hilton finally got his jumping right, huh?
Yeah, he did. And he got the game ball because of it. And I've written about it. We've talked about it. And Coach Brian Kelly's talked about it. This offense has lacked a deep threat, especially when Kyle Parker went down with that arm injury, too. That was pretty much the end of, he was the one guy that I think he could have provided a little bit of it. And it just took a while for Chris Hilton to get into the flow of it. And once he decided to run through the football a little bit more instead of jumping like he's been jumping for some of these 50-50 balls, he was able to make two terrific plays. And that was good to see because, Tommy, there's these whispers that he's been frustrated with how this season has gone, and probably didn't necessarily appreciate the tongue lashing that he got on national TV and everybody talking about it, tongue lashing for Brian Kelly. And
but
there's been whispers about him entering the transfer portal. Maybe this game here shows that, hey, if I stick it out here at LSU and I got Nussmeier as my quarterback, big things can happen for me next season.
I've seen that video repeatedly against Florida, and I understand it could be perceived as a tongue lashing, and you know this better than I do, Jeff, but you could see Brian Kelly was trying to coach him up, And the only
time
it got ugly was when Hilton pulled away from him, and you could see Brian Kelly clearly say, "Don't blanking pull away from me." You could read his lips clearly.
Yeah.
That's what he was saying. So the tongue lashing, I don't think was about. I think it was about coaching and jumping and technique, but I think it maybe turned a little bit serious when you pull away from the head coach. You don't do that when the head coach is talking to you. That's what I think happened. At least, agree?
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. And this has to be this has been a frustrating season for Hilton, because when he suffered the injury, I mean, no one expected him to miss the next 2 months of the season. I mean, you go back to the USC game, and it was like, okay, he's not going to play in this game, but he'll be ready for the home opener against Nichols. And then it was like, that was the same thing every week. And then you just kind of, you actually just forgot to, you just stopped asking Brian Kelly about him because you knew he wasn't going to play. And then when he does play, you put him in a game, Texas A&M, a high-stakes game on the road. You're asking him to make plays, and it just didn't work out. And then, you know, the Florida game was obviously what we were just alluding to about the coachable moment that Brian Kelly had with him that the whole world got to see.
But it was not a tongue lashing until he pulled away from him. That's all I'm trying to say. All right, let me take a break. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. Because, you know, you talk about Hilton, and I'm thinking, okay, maybe he can – you keep the band together. Maybe Chris Hilton turns in another Malik Nabers or Brian Thomas Jr., right, with Garrett Nussmeier into controls. Who knows?
Well, that was the hope that he was going to have a breakout season this year. Maybe it happens next year now for LSU.
That's going to be part of – and we'll talk about challenges Brian Kelly's going to face for next year. And I heard – who was it over the weekend talking about their team with under the cap? Who was that saying that? Do you remember, Jeff?
That was Brian Kelly.
Brian Kelly, that's what it was under the cap. Yes, that's exactly who it was. All right, 7:22 traffic now, WWL. All right, 7:27 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Jeff Palermo about the LSU Tigers, and he had a Kelly had a press conference after the game, naturally, and he was talking about seeing the national championships. His optimism remains high, right?
His optimism is through the roof. I think this is going to be a press conference, Tommy, that LSU fans, I think all of us are going to remember. And we're going to also hold Brian Kelly, too, because he basically came out and promised that they would win a national championship or at least play in a national championship game. Now, whether that happens next season, the year after that, I mean, he didn't, you know, say, hey, 2025, here we come. But he really feels good about the future of the program. He talked about, hey, we had two freshmen out there, Devon Keyes and Dominic McKinley, or actually five freshmen out there and two sophomores, is that what he said? But Devon Keyes and Dominic McKinley played very well in that game. McKinley had a couple sacks late in the game. Devon Keyes was all over the place in that contest at linebacker. You have a recruiting class that will be signed starting on Wednesday. You're going to have 37 freshmen that are going to be part of the winter conditioning program. And I think part of it, though, too, Tommy, we all know that Brian Kelly has a background in politics. He was politicking a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it was Wednesday is such a huge day for the program because it's the early national signing period. And I think he was really sending a message to those recruits who I'm sure some of them are getting calls still from other schools. And if there's any of them waffling, he was making his pitch to them saying, hey, we're close. We need you to join our program to help us get over the top.
Let me get
but
this
we're
real
not
quick.
That far away.
Jeff, before we run out of time, the Advocate reporting to Ricky Collins, a freshman quarterback, is going to enter a transfer portal. Maybe indication that Nussmeier's staying?
Well, and I think the big part of it was A.J. Swan has been getting the times that Nussmeier has had to leave the game, it's been A.J. Swan over Ricky Collins. Mm-hmm. And I think at this point, Ricky Collins has made a decision. I don't know how much of that has to go into Nussmeier. I'm sure. But right now, Ricky Collins has been on the LSU football program for 2 years, and he's a third string quarterback, and you gotta make your move. There's going to be other guys that are going to defect from that are going to get in the transfer portal. I think guys that are going to get in there that are have a bigger role on this current team that's going to end up on that transfer portal. And again, that goes back to, I think, what Brian Kelly was talking to the media on Saturday night. I mean, you not only got the national signing day period, but you got the transfer portal is going to reopen here in the middle of December. He is sending a message that, hey, we're not that far away. And Tommy, they really are not, mm-hmm. in a way, because if they beat Florida, if they would have defeated Florida, a game that they were favored to do, they're in the SEC championship game this Saturday. Yep. That's how close they were. It's how close they were, but in a way, too, when you look at an 8-4 record, you're still saying they're still a lot of the mountain to climb here for them.
So close yet so far away. Jeff, some great observations. Exactly. Thank you, man. I appreciate your time. We'll take a break, come back, take a look at the week ahead on Wall Street, Monday Morning Markets with Mark Rosa. Right now, a minute late, time for WWL First News. All right, here we go, 744, 16 till 8, directly to Mark Rosa. We go, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, for Monday Morning Markets at Mark, where we take a look at the week ahead on Wall Street. How you doing, Mark?
Tommy, how are you?
Happy Monday to you. Anxious to get back to work after the long Thanksgiving weekend?
Yes, sir.
And
well,
I guess
one of us was working on Friday.
Well, it would be you.
That's right. That's right.
For those
right. We had to do the show. For Dave and me.
For those playing morning show Jeopardy, the answer would be, who is Mark Rosa?
that's right.
I was busy reconstructing a ramp for a shed, so I would have rather been here. Yeah.
I hear that.
Let's talk about Wall Street. What's going on?
Well, before Wall Street, for the past several mornings, wake up to 30-degree weather.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that nice?
Oh,
fantastic. I just had to get that out. We had the week before last, we had almost no economic news coming out. And then last week, we had just a plethora of data. And, you know, starting off with the Dow and S&P hit all-time highs. And we had an abbreviated week. Of course, Thursday closed, half a day Friday. But consumer confidence is coming in far better than expected. Durable goods orders, and some of these things go, you know, hand in hand. Durable goods orders came in. The previous month, they were down. It shrank. It was a negative number. And this month passed for October was up again. So, you know, from a confidence standpoint, that's the durable goods or the big ticket items, things that tend to last more than 3 years. You've got appliances, you've got cars, you've got a lot of big ticket items that are bunched into that. So, you know, people are feeling decently about things. And it's not that the inflation has fallen. The inflation keeps rising. More on that in just a second. But I think, you know, when all of this hit, the talk in the banking circles was, this is kind of an esoteric statement, that your balance sheet has to normalize, that, you know, we were used to very low rates for so long, and then the Fed started raising rates to combat inflation, and that took a lot of people by surprise. Inflation did, higher rates did, made a mess of things, still making a mess of things to a lesser extent, but it's like when this normalizes, I remember right before the credit crisis, you know, car loans were 6% and 7%. Nobody cared. That's what the rate was. Then after credit, in response to that, in response to COVID, when the rates had fallen so low, now people are saying, where's the 1.49% car loans that are used to get at the credit union when interest rates were low? Well, that party's over. And now, you know, a decent rate might start with a 5 or 6. And again, it's very similar to the rates that we had in the past. HELOC rates were 7% routinely, and that's what people paid because that's what the rates were. So I think we had enjoyed very low rates for so long that people were wishing that was the norm. The savers took it on the chin because we had a lot of CD, just invigorated a lot of interest in certificates of deposit when the Fed started raising rates. I think people were thinking, I'm not going to live long enough to see a 5%, you know, 2-year CD again. And of course, that's what we've had. And that continues to persist. But that was a sideline. I'll come back to inflation news in a second. But GDP, the first revision for the third quarter, up 2.8%. That's right in line with expectations and a good number for an economy our size at almost $30 trillion. Our GDP is the largest in the world. Our economy is the largest in the world financially. And for it to move at almost 3%, that's good news. Personal income came in double expected. So apparently a lot of businesses are meeting the demands of employees. They need more money. if you know the inflation has gone on for long enough, that unless you're going to lose the employee, you got to belly up to it. You got to pay more. And the previous month it was up 0.3%, and this past month, October, it was up 0.6% for the month. That's over a 7% annualized rate, which is again good news because that's coming up consistent with rising prices. And when that goes up, personal spending is reported, and it goes up almost point for point with personal spending. People tend to spend the money that they have. So that personal spending was up 0.4% for the month. And along comes the Fed's inflation gauge, the personal consumption expenditure, for October. Now, this is the one that the Fed watches particularly closely. It's their own construct. It's their own mechanism, and they watch what this is. So last month in September was up 0.2. October was up the same, 0.2. That was in line with expectations. But here is the rub, that they are pulling back, the Fed is, they're pulling back on their the projections that they're going to continue to lower rates next year. And they meet in 15 days, and a 65% chance we're going to get a 25 basis point cut. That'll be a full percentage point this year that started in August that they're cutting rates. Now, that's a far cry from the 5 percentage point increases we got when inflation was soaring. So I know a lot, the banking sector, just the economy in general would love lower rates. But again, Tommy, this has all been bleeding in that the Dow and S&P, I mean, people looking at their 401ks, looking at their holdings, and these are one record after the other. The Dow eclipsed the 45,000 mark, and the S&P is over 6,000 now. And it's like this has a little bit more to go in terms of the economy is performing decently, inflation is tamed, but the year-over-year number has ratcheted up from 2.1 to 2.3. And I think that's going to be the part where the Fed is given enough ammunition to pause. If it starts creeping up, I think they're going to want to be on the front of this. Remember, they said when inflation was ramping up, oh, it's going to be transitory and this is going to go by the wayside very quickly. And of course, they were wrong. So as this ratchets up, I don't know if they'd be as eager to keep cutting rates. Again, where I started out, I think a lot of the pricing and what is going on of late is just kind of baked in, and they can sit on their hands for a while. And the January prediction is 57% on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange Fed Watch tool. 57% saying no cut in January, where that was a foregone conclusion. They were going to cut in January, possibly one more time in the first quarter. I think a lot of that's off the table. And what we would really rather not happen is at some point in the first half of next year, the Fed's like, well, inflation is returning, got a new administration. They're going to handle the economy a little bit differently than if Trump's competitor was winning. And it's like, what if inflation comes back? The Fed's going to start raising rates again. You know, some have forecasted, well, don't take that off the table. 6 months ago, that was no way are they looking at raising rates. But now that this conversation's starting to bleed into the news.
Somebody texted in about their kids want to get in a house that they keep waiting and waiting for rates to go down.
Oh, no, no.
Inflation eating them up.
Yes.
So
yes.
What would you say to people that have children in that position, grown children, or people that are listening that are waiting to buy their first home, the outlook for that, Mark?
When I was really beating the table last August when the rates fell to 5, mm-hmm. And they were kind of preempting the Fed's reduction in rates because they were falling when it was just anticipated. So it was in the 5s. I know some people at Odyssey that got a couple of 5. I mean, in the not 5.0, it might have been 5.5, 5.38, something like that. And then it didn't last long. And we kept saying it. It's like, get locked that in while you can. If you're waiting for another 2 basis points to fall, I think you're going to be on the wrong side of it. Sure enough. So with what all we were saying so far this morning, I think you do some shopping, and I think you can get one in the 6s. It's not going. I don't know if it's going to be 6.0, but go to bankrate.com, and you could. They have a good structure on where the rates are across the country, and then you could start shopping locally. If you have a mortgage already, go to where the mortgage is and see if the existing financial institution could do anything for maybe a refinance. If not, you could just start calling around and looking for some rates, because I think sixes are about, but they're approaching seven again, because the belief is that the Fed is not going to keep lowering rates. We might get this one in December, and then I think they're going to sit on their hands for a while if inflation is ticking up. So as far as that being my advice, if you can get something with the six, I would do that and not wait for, oh, well, it's going to fall by another quarter or something like that. I don't think that's coming.
Leads me nicely to a promo for tomorrow. We're going to talk to Arthur Sturbco about real estate, as we do every now and then, because you want to get on that equity ladder, and you can always mark the...
Absolutely.
You can always refinance, right? If the deal is right, you can always refinance if you can afford to get in the first place.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you, sir.
And new home... Thank you, sir. We'll talk later.
And you can go to jeffersonfinancial.org, find these calculators to see what you can afford and maybe what you can't afford. They got a bunch of them there, and
absolutely,
it's absolutely free. Mark Rosa, thank you, sir. President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. We'll talk to you Friday when we help you manage your money with Mark. 7:55, 5 till 8. Traffic now, WWL. 8:14, now a beautiful Monday morning. First Monday in December. We are into December, in case you lost track of all that during the holidays. Highs today only in the 60s, and right now we're hanging around 48 degrees if you average the temperature throughout the area. And we're joined by Ramon Antonio Vargas, editor and reporter at The Guardian, to talk about the latest on a couple of different things. How you doing, Ramon?
Good morning. I am good, trying to get back into the swing of things.
Yeah, it's tough after the long weekend. Let me get to this text real quick while Ramon is on. Can you ask if he's got an update on the state police raid of the archdiocese offices? Do you know anything new?
There isn't much new. I know that it is ongoing. I know that it is active. Unfortunately, the length of these investigations are, especially one as complex and covering as long a period of time that this one is. Obviously, those investigations are measured in years usually, as opposed to weeks or months. But I can confirm as of a few days ago that it is ongoing and active for sure.
All right, let's talk about this Anthony Odiong. I'm just reading through your story here, and you can tell us the whole story. You got, you know, at least 10 minutes to do that, Ramon, maybe a little bit more. But I just can't imagine getting anybody to give me $25,000. Can you?
No, I really can't.
And I like to think that I'm a kind of personable guy. You know what I'm saying? That I could. I'm likable, but not. But boy, this guy. Tell me the story. Go ahead.
I mean, I think that also what's remarkable about that is, best I can tell, it's not like $25,000 for a specific cause that you're helping someone else or that you're going through like a difficult. I think it's just $25,000. Like, hey, here's $25,000.
Yeah. Here you go.
Best I can do, you know,
I believe in you and the apocalypse that's coming in Africa and everything else that he's calling for. But I'm getting ahead of myself. This guy, hey, look, you know, he can sue me if he wants, but this guy seems to be, although a Catholic priest and a sexual predator, he seems to be just like your basic religious con man. And Anthony Odiong, if you want to sue me, go ahead. But truth is an absolute defense. Go ahead, Ramon.
I think it could be a painful discovery process if he did that.
Not to mention, yes.
But he's obviously Anthony Odiong. As we've discussed here, has been facing criminal charges in Texas, and the simplest way to put it is just for allegedly abusing his position of authority within the church to pursue sex with vulnerable women, and they're made vulnerable, I guess, by his position to them as like a spiritual advisor and kind of like the person guiding their spiritual journey. Right. What came out, right before the holiday last week, at a bail hearing, and he was trying to get his bail reduced. And one of the pieces of evidence that the authorities, used to sort of argue, in favor of keeping the bail, in place at $5.5 million, is that he has, fathered at least two children with women whom he approached under the guise that I described. Obviously, It's not so much that you know, it's obviously a violation of his you know, promise of obviously priests are required to be celibate. So it's not so much a violation of that, that's why it came up in the hearing. It's more that, I mean, that is about the strongest proof of the pattern that he is accused of engaging in, right? Obviously, when you have a child that is living, breathing DNA evidence, especially when the mothers are people whom he initially approached under the guise of, hey, like, I'm kind of like the friendly local priest, and, you know, let me get close to you to kind of foster your to help you foster your kind of relationship with God. And obviously, it's, if you remember last year, around this time last year, when he, Anthony Odiong, was removed from ministry in the Archdiocese of New Orleans, at St. Anthony of Padua and Luling in particular.
Say that again, please.
He was removed from ministry around this time last year at St. Anthony of Padua and Luling. You may remember that he initially tried to argue that that the reason was because he was you know, he was opposed to the lifestyle of the LGBTQ plus community that, you know, Pope Francis since then and at the time has been sort of actively like courting and trying to make the church more welcoming to members of those communities as they, you know, as the church kind of tries to offset some of the losses in terms of numbers that it's had and reduction of population that it's had over the years. And then, if you may remember, he referred to those people as, you know, he quote unquote said that we were, you know, members of those communities. He insulted them as, you know, monkeys and chimpanzees and all sorts of elephants, if I recall correctly. Obviously, very offensive, very homophobic language that he was using at the time. And it's just remarkable because, by all indications, at the time he had pretty big secret as far as. You know, a pretty big secret, not to mention, you know, that, you know, pretty big sin if you are, if you believe in, you know, in those aspects of the Catholic doctrine, for sure.
Let me take a break real quick, because his problems in Texas go beyond violating his vows, correct? It goes to violating the law, and he is, as I understand it, deep trouble in Texas. I also want to talk about his imminent apocalyptic coming of the apostles in Africa. And he intends to eventually speak directly with Donald Trump and advise him on the apocalypse. We'll talk about all that when we come back. 8:20. This got nothing to do with Donald Trump. This is just what this guy saying, this con man saying. 8:21 traffic now, WWL. 8:26, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Ramon Antonio Vargas, editor and reporter at The Guardian. Up until last year this time, Anthony Odiong was at, what's the parish?
St. Anthony in Luling.
In Luling, subsequently, he's under arrest in Texas, and it's not just in Texas, it's more than just violating your priestly vows, correct, Ramon?
Yeah, no, he's accused of, Texas has a law which criminalizes sexual contact, I guess, between a member of the clergy and a parishioner who is in that clergy member's like spiritual sway, and especially usually in like kind of a spiritual advisor, like congregant role. And so he's accused of violating that with, he's facing basically seven counts of, seven of those charges, with three women, but then, they've identified at least nine women whom he sort of, pursued under the same kind of pretense, though. Not all of them have led to charges, mainly because not all of them have been in Texas where that law is in effect.
So he's constructing, according to, this was the DA, I guess, or authorities that
yeah, so it,
tell me about that.
Correct. So it was at a, this information all came from a bail hearing in last week where he was trying to, he's being held $5.5 million bail. He can't afford it. That just given the volume of charges against him. So he was arguing for, you know, a bail that he was arguing would still be high, but that he could afford and then, you know, would basically hang out in the jurisdiction until just out of custody until the trial came. you know, and during that hearing, you had a detective testifying, and you had some, you know, some arguments made by prosecutors as far as the access to the support that he would have if he were able to get out and then, you know, basically make a run for it, right? He has one of the things that came up. I mean, one person testified that they, you know, that that they could personally give $25,000 out of their pocket to basically, you know, fund his just kind of being out. They said, you know, I think one of the quotes that was really stunning was like, "We love you, Father." You know, "Thank you, Father. We love Father." Right. And this is somebody that's accused this is somebody that's charged with, you know, basically sexually abusing, you know, these vulnerable people, around him, right? "He's a dear friend of myself and my family," was one person who testified.
And for people that are saying deport him, he's apparently sitting on a bunch of money building, according to this detective, a luxurious home in Nigeria. This is pretty good for a simple priest, huh?
Yeah, that's correct. And he's also a U.S. citizen, so that's also obviously difficult to deport him at this stage.
So he's probably going to – they're not going to give him bond because even though
correct.
His passport's expired, he would be a flight risk. So chances are they got the goods on him and he spends the rest of his life in jail, Ramon. I know you're a reporter. You don't like to speculate, but that's the way it would seem to me.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's two outcomes, right? He goes to trial. That's a lot of witnesses lined up against him, a lot of evidence lined up against him. I mean, considering what they've already aired, it tells you that, again, that's the tip of the iceberg so far. Or so he either goes to trial or he pleads guilty and kind of, you know, pleads for leniency. So we'll have to see what happens.
And real quick, we only have a minute left. He is part of the ongoing bankruptcy case here in this archdiocese, correct?
That's correct. There is at least one of the victims identified in the case has filed a claim for damages into the bankruptcy. Now, what's interesting is whether one of the things that remains to be seen is whether the criminal investigation into the archdiocese and whether it covered up decades of sexual abuse, mostly targeting children, whether there is a link between that investigation and this one in Texas. We will see whether one day Anthony Odeong is interviewed or is a witness in that case.
Let me wrap it up with this, Ramon, if I may, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. He was at St. Anthony of Padua in Luling up until last year at this time. Now he's facing life in prison in Texas. Accurate?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate your time as always, Ramon. We'll talk to you again soon as you uncover something else. I appreciate your work. Ramon Antonio Vargas, editor and reporter at The Guardian. We'll talk about keeping you safe on Cyber Monday when we come back. Right now, a minute late, time for WWL First. 8:47, 13 till 9. It is Cyber Monday, which follows. Let's welcome in Alex Hammerstone, our friend, director of advisory solutions for Trusted Sec. How you doing, Alex?
I am doing very well. Had a great Thanksgiving. How about you?
I am doing great. So we had a nice Thanksgiving as well. Browns play in Denver tonight or in Cleveland?
I think in Denver. I should know that.
Last week it's in Denver. Tim, pardon me, tells me last week you had the snowstorm there on the banks of the what lake is it?
Lake Erie.
Lake Erie, yeah. I know, because the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I believe you can sit and have a cup of coffee right on Lake Erie, can't you? If I remember.
You absolutely got it.
Yeah, I sure did.
It's a pretty nice lake.
It is. It is a nice lake. It's a lovely lake. Let's talk about online shopping. Today's Cyber Monday. Was yesterday anything or not? I know it was Small Business Saturday.
It just goes back to the days when people, you know, they didn't have as much internet at home, right? Yeah. They had much faster internet at work. And so there was always Black Friday, right, the day after Thanksgiving.
Wait a minute, really?
Cyber Monday.
I didn't realize that. That's why? Because people would do it at work because the internet connection was faster at work than at home?
Yep, that's right. And, and people would rather, I think, shop, and they're at their desk anyway, but that was the time to really kind of shop on the Monday. You know, the Monday you're back in the office, you've got your fast internet connection, and you're going to shop away.
So let's talk about ways to stay safe if you are doing some shopping online, if you haven't already done it. And along those lines, are people shopping online earlier, Alex?
They are. I mean, it's you see these deals that come out. You know, a lot of the retailers have kind of, you know, Cyber Week as opposed to just Cyber Monday. And, you know, people will have more and more, you know, deals that are kind of stretching out, trying to really extend that holiday shopping season so they can make a little bit more money.
So let's talk about ways to stay safe. What about, should you stick with familiar or popular websites?
So generally, yes. Although I always want to be clear, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, small businesses we want to support for sure. But, you know, when you go with kind of the known brands, the bigger companies, they often will have much better return policies. You know, you're more likely to have a good supply chain and get the products that you actually ordered. But I think the number one piece of advice I like to give people when shopping online is to use a credit card, not a debit card. You know, because a credit card has all kinds of consumer protections. And if you're scammed, if you lose money on a credit card, you notify the credit card company and they'll do an investigation, but you're not out the money. With a debit card, your money is gone, and then you have to open up an investigation to get the money returned to you. And it's much different, right? Because I don't know about anybody else, but for me, if my checking account were wiped out, that would make for a really uncomfortable December.
Yeah, and if I have that conversation with my grown kid one more time, I'm going to pull the three hairs that I have left in my head out. What about when it comes to making sure the site's secure? Does that little the lock in the browser mean anything, or when you check out?
It did for years, right? I mean, it meant that it was, you know, using a kind of a secure transmission protocol. But these days, just about every site's going to have that lock, right? I mean, you know, most websites are going to be using HTTPS. So again, it's important to make sure that you're looking for it. But it's a lot like seatbelts in cars, right? They all have them now.
Okay, I got you. What about looking into the seller? And is that where Amazon helps because they vet all the sellers? Let me take a step back. When you do business or when I do business with Amazon, I'm not doing business with the third-party company. I'm doing business with Amazon, or am I doing business with the third-party company?
So you're doing business with Amazon, right? That's who's taking your money and the transaction. But there are also a lot of sellers that sell through Amazon. And there are a number of ways they may do it, right? The seller may ship things directly from their location. A lot of sellers will kind of send things, their items, to Amazon, and then Amazon will then ship them to you. So there's a number of ways that it works, but, you know, when you're going on Amazon.com and sending your money there, you know, it's going to Amazon. It may end up going to a third party after, but it's going through Amazon.
Yeah, they say you should never lie, but sometimes when they ask you on shopping forms for some personal information, if they require it, is it better maybe not to disclose a lot of that stuff?
I mean, they're going to need your address, right? They need your address and where to ship things, you know, whether that's, you know, your home or your office or a P.O. box. And they'll need your name, right, so it matches up with a credit card number for shipping and things like that. But they shouldn't really need much more information about you. You know, I don't like to give out demographic information. They don't need to know, you know, my gender. They don't need to know how old I am. They just need to know that I'm giving them money and they're sending me the product I asked for. And so outside of that,
go ahead.
Yeah, outside of that, I'm fine with not sharing anything.
Yeah, there's a certain big box sporting goods store that I don't go to anymore because every time you check out, it's a problem. What's your zip code? It's not. Don't worry about what my zip code is. I'm paying you cash. Do you want to sell me the weight plates or whatever the hell it is? Or not here. You don't need my phone number. Just sell this stuff to me. What about paying with your phone in stores and things like that?
I think it's great. It's so convenient. You know, especially younger people have really, you know, kind of adopted, you know, Google Pay and Apple Pay and those kind of pay on the phone methods. Yeah, I think they're a great solution, especially if you don't want to use a credit card. So using something like Apple Cash can be great. You know, there's a lot of security there, and it does protect you in a number of ways. So I'm all for paying by phone. You know, life is all about balancing risk and convenience. And, you know, it's of course, I think it's safer than walking around with a giant stack of cash, right? It's not like you can stop payment on the serial numbers of your cash if it gets stolen. So I think anything where you're, you know, using electronic payments is going to be a much better idea for people shopping in person.
Yeah, I'm so concerned with anything that even approaches sketchy online because it can appear legit online and be sketchy. So if it looks sketchy online, then I think you're really begging for trouble. What about gift card exchanges?
So gift cards are tough. So gift cards, you know, come up a lot in different kind of fraudulent scenarios. You know, one thing to remember is you should never be paying somebody with a gift card, right? So the IRS will never ask you to pay your tax bill with gift cards. A lot of scammers will kind of call you and try to get you to buy gift cards and then have you send them pictures of the gift card, right, with the scratched off code. And that's so prevalent that if you go to, you know, kind of the major drug stores or the major big box stores and you buy a gift card, there's oftentimes a warning that pops up on the point of sale device, you know, letting you know that gift cards are really a common scam. when it comes to gift cards at exchanges, you know, that's no big deal, right? I mean, people that you know are passing out gift cards. You know, personally, I'm always a fan of if you're going to give a gift card, go ahead and give the cash, because the number of unused gift cards just sitting in desk drawers that never actually get spent or end up with a $3 balance on them is pretty large. But certainly if somebody you know, wants a gift card and there's a place they'd like to go, then I'm all for it, right? I mean, it's a way to kind of store value in a safe way.
But to your point, it really is kind of silly. If I'm going to give you a gift card, I'm basically giving you cash. All I'm doing is limiting where you can spend it.
I agree, but that's my personal view, right?
Yeah, that's mine too. Let's talk about VPNs real quick if you're using a public Wi-Fi.
Sure. So VPNs, you know, a virtual private network. And if you think about it, you know, the kind of layman's terms is it kind of creates a tunnel between, you know, your computer and where you're going. And so, you know, using them in public is important. You know, it's a lot of people use them for other reasons, right? Because with a VPN, you can kind of change what your location is. So if you're traveling, right, so you may have a certain streaming service that only works in the U.S., but you're going, you know, overseas, so you want to watch your shows. People will use a VPN to then kind of show that they're in the U.S. or something like that. But it's certainly important. But again, it's we're kind of at the point now where the credit card fraud prevention and a lot of the other things that I'm not saying people shouldn't worry, but things are getting in many ways safer.
Thank you, Alex. I appreciate your time, your expertise, as always. We'll talk to you again, I'm sure, before Christmas. And look, 90 days has passed. You can't return Jameis Winston.
Yeah, I know.
Have a good day. All right, 8:56, 4 till 9, traffic now, WWL. Matriculating through this Monday morning, coming up on 9:10, and college is expensive enough, and we know the problem we have with student debt. So why wouldn't you get the help and the aid that's available for you? Well, a lot of people leaving money on the table, apparently. Ebony Holmes joins us, Director of Public Information and Advising for the Louisiana Office of Student Financial Assistance, or as it's otherwise known, LOSFA. Not to be confused with FAFSA. Good morning, Ebony. How are you?
Good morning. I am well. How are you?
I'm breaking in a cold sweat because I'm reminded of when my kid was a senior in high school, and I don't remember exactly at what time of year it was, but the guidance counselor talking to the room full of parents with LOFSA and FAFSA, and my eyes just glazing over, and it can be confusing.
It can be.
So tell me what's going on with in Louisiana, I guess, with FAFSA and the difference. First off, maybe we can talk about the differences between LOSFA and FAFSA.
Sure. So LOSFA, as you stated, is the name of our agency, which is we oversee a lot of the state's financial aid programs in Louisiana, including the state's 529 programs, while the FAFSA is short for Free Application for Federal Student Aid, which is the application for Pell Grant, you know, students are seeking student loans, any of that federal money, and we also use it as the application for TOPS. So LOSFA is the agency, FAFSA is an application for financial aid.
LOSFA is the agency, FAFSA is the application, yes?
Yes.
Okay, good. Well, you know, and I'm trying to think about, is there a season for this? Because it's coming up on 10 years. My kid's been out of high school, which is hard to believe. Really, time flies. Is there a season for that? Is now the time of year where parents should be looking at this? Or is it too late or what? Tell me about that.
Nope, not too late. And there is a season. Typically, the FAFSA would open in October, and students are going to complete a FAFSA in their senior year of high school. So typically, going towards the end of the year is when parents and students should be looking for that application to open. A lot of people know that they, or may not know, that they totally revamped the FAFSA starting last year. And so because they've kind of been working over some of the glitches, it's been opening a little bit later last year and this year. It actually opened last week. And so right on time, if parents, students have not done the FAFSA, they still have time because it just really opened up.
They had a big problem with this at the national level last year. Did they not? Do I remember that right?
Oh, you are remembering correctly. Huge problem. They were intending to make it easier. You know, I know it's been a while. You said like 10 years since you've done one, but you probably remember how long and kind of cumbersome it was. And
I've tried to block it, Ebony. The nightmares have finally gone away. So I tried to block it, but yes, I do remember how incredibly challenging it can be. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yes. Oh, no, you're fine. It's incredibly challenging, and unfortunately, you know, the efforts that they put forth in trying to make it simpler just kind of fell flat last year. And so that nightmare scenario kind of on steroids with, you know, technical glitches and students not being able to complete the form. And so this year they waited, you know, until December, which was the goal, but they ended up rolling it out a little early, and they took the time to fix those glitches so that now it should, you know, in theory, take probably 15 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes to complete it, because it's been reduced from over 100 questions to 33.
So let me open the phone lines here at 504-260-1870. If you do have a child, this would be for parents of seniors, juniors,
mm-hmm. Seniors in high school, or even if you have students who are currently in college who are receiving federal aid, mm-hmm. Or if they've initially done a FAFSA, and even if they need to renew it, now would be the time for them to do it as well. So high school seniors would be completing it for the first time, and then you have those college students who would be doing a renewal.
And it can be confusing. So again, at Open Heart Jeweler Talk and Text Line 504-260-1870, if you text your questions in, I'll pass them along to Ebony Holmes, who's our guest, Director of Public Information and Advising for the Louisiana Office of Student Financial Assistance, LOSFA, which is not to be confused with FAFSA, which is the application, the free application for federal student aid. If I remember correctly, every student should fill out a FAFSA because you don't know what you're eligible for and what you're not, right?
Correct. And so what we've really focused on these past 2 years, because we know it can be confusing, if you visit our website at mylosfa.la.gov, we have a decision tree that students and parents can look at to kind of see the difference between, you know, if I just want to apply for TOPS or if I want to do the FAFSA. But of course, we do encourage students to do it because, as you said, you know, you never know what you may or may not be eligible for. So it's better to complete it. And that way, if you're eligible for funding, you'll be able to have access to that.
So what happened last year with the problems that they had in Louisiana after the problems they had with FAFSA?
So last year, one of the big changes that happened is that Louisiana was the first state to actually make FAFSA completion a graduation requirement, but then that was repealed. So moving forward for our 2025 high school graduates, they are not required to complete the FAFSA or do a waiver for graduation. But of course, what we saw happen in Louisiana was kind of the same thing that we saw nationally, with students just not being able to complete the FAFSA because of technical glitches. There were just a lot of errors that were, you know, for some students not being able to get their parents' information onto the form. It was rolled out late. And so, of course, that created an additional challenge for Louisiana, who at the time it was a graduation requirement. So we had a very short window to try to get those students on board and get those FAFSAs completed. And so even now we're still, you know, about 10% shy of where we were with completion rates last year. And that's, you know, kind of reflecting what's happening at a national level as well, just because of kind of how that the whole FAFSA kind of rolled out last year.
So was there pushback from parents who didn't want to fill out the FAFSA, even though it was a requirement or still maybe until next year, to get a diploma, because they're saying, well, why do I have to give this information when my kid's not going to college? Is that what's going on here?
Well, the good thing is that they always have the option to do a waiver. So if they did not want to complete the FAFSA, they could do a waiver, and that would fulfill that graduation requirement. And then they also had the ability to, for those students who only want to apply for TOPS, they have that TOPS online application, and that also would have fulfilled the graduation requirement. Thankfully, you know, moving forward with the 2025 graduates, that's not something that they'll have to worry about, but we still are available to assist because we understand that students who desire to matriculate or, you know, go into a post-secondary institution, whether it be 2-year, 4-year, that there is going to be a cost gap for many students, and the FAFSA can be one of the tools to help close that gap.
And I guess, too, maybe by it being a requirement or the waiver, if you choose to opt out, maybe some people think they can't afford to go to college when, in fact, after filling out the FAFSA, they find out that they can?
Correct. And, you know, the FAFSA is a federal form, but it's also, you know, as an example, we use it as the application for TOPS. Students who are eligible for Pell Grant funding will also be eligible for, can be eligible for a Louisiana GO Grant, which is state aid. So a lot of the post-secondary institutions also will ask for a FAFSA to be completed when they are looking at awarding institutional aid to their students. So lots of benefits to filling it out. It's kind of what I call a kind of kill two birds with one stone, in that you are applying for so many different types of aid just by filling out that one application.
To be clear, this is not a loan. These are grants?
Correct. So, and what happens is that when you fill out, and a lot of people don't want to do the FAFSA because they're like, oh, well, I don't want loans. And so what happens is that they'll determine your eligibility for pretty much everything. You know, your Pell Grant, federal, the FSEOG, which is another type of grant. There's work study, basically, where the student would be provided a job on campus if the school participates in work study, and they would basically work for a certain amount of financial aid. And then they have student loans. But students always have the option to decline loans. And so that's one of those things where we advise students, only borrow what you need. If you don't need, then you can decline those loans.
How is your office, which is lost for working to make sure that Louisiana's students in the state, that they do fill out FAFSA and they fill it out properly?
So we're located in Baton Rouge. One of the things that we do is that we have a lab in our office where students and parents can come in to complete their FAFSA. We also have been doing FAFSA Friday events where students and parents can get assistance with setting up an FSA ID, which is going to be the first step to them accessing the FAFSA. So we have virtual office hours where, you know, if you're not located in Baton Rouge, you can still access us. A lot of the schools in the state have already started sending in event requests to have us come out and do FAFSA completion workshops with their students and their parents. So we do a good bit of work at the high school level. Usually in early spring, we're partnering with post-secondary institutions to host like statewide FAFSA completion events. And so in whatever capacity that we can make ourselves available to assist students and parents, that's what we try to do.
I get a text that comes in here and it says, thank God this lady is on because I have a senior in high school and I do not know where to begin as it relates to TOPS. So maybe when we come back, Ebony Holmes, you can walk us through TOPS, GO Grants, Pell Grants, FAFSA, if that's how you pronounce it, and ways that I guess maybe like aid 101, how parents know to go about it?
Absolutely.
All right, good. Ebony Holmes, our guest director of public information advising for the Louisiana Office of Student Financial Assistance, or as it's otherwise known, LOSFA. I think what we're going to do is this. We're going to start with a student A, and then they're a senior in high school, and we're going to go from that point to how do you go to fill out and find out what you're eligible for, et cetera, et cetera. It's just your money, and you certainly don't want to rack up a loan if you don't need to. Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWL. 928, it's your money. Ebony Holmes joins us, Director of Public Information Advising for the Louisiana Office of Student Financial Assistance, LOSFA, talking about the FAFSA form, which is the preliminary step to getting TOPS. Did I say anything wrong, Ebony?
Nope, that is correct. The FAFSA is going to be considered as the application for federal aid, but we also use it for TOPS. And then we also have just a separate TOPS online application for those individuals who do not want to complete the FAFSA. But absolutely, if a student does that FAFSA, we are going to use that as the application for TOPS.
So let's talk about a student. Tommy, whatever, is a student and getting ready to graduate. And what should the parents do from the outset if they plan on going to college?
If the student is planning on attending college, one of the first steps, of course, is we are big proponents of match and fit. So that's kind of taking a look at the institutions that they're planning to attend, kind of, you know, seeing which one is going to be a good fit for them, depending on whatever their major is. And then once they've done that, now is the time the FAFSA is open. Now's the time that students and parents can start filling out that FAFSA. One of the things that they'll need to do before that is going to be applying for an FSA ID. And that is simply a password and a username, a combination of a password and username that they create. And that's going to be like their login. And it also serves as a signature for them to sign the FAFSA, which is, you know, an online form. So once they've created the FSA ID, this is all going to be done through Federal Student Aid's website. They'll create the FSA ID about 1 to 3 days. They'll get a response back saying it's been verified. And at that point, they can go ahead and do the FAFSA. The really good thing about the FSA ID is that once it's set up, when they start that FAFSA, it's going to pull all that information in already. So that's going to, you know, go towards that 10 to 15 minutes filling it out. It really is a much simpler and shorter form this go round. And so immediately once they've submitted that FAFSA and it's complete, the student's going to know right then and there if they're eligible for the federal Pell Grant and in what amount. And then the other aid, which is what we call campus-based aid, is going to be determined by the institution that they are going to be attending. And so they can list up to 20 schools on the FAFSA. Those schools that they list are going to get a copy of everything that they submit on that FAFSA so that they can start packaging that student. And so I would say once they've submitted that FAFSA, to kind of be looking early spring for something from the post-secondary institutions that they've applied to and been accepted to. And they are going to let them know, this is how much you're going to be eligible for, you know, Pell Grant. This is how much you'll be eligible for GO Grant. This is how much you're going to be eligible for FSEOG or for work study. And so we really advise students at that point, you know, if you have a couple offers from a few institutions, to really sit down with your, you know, students and parents, sit down and kind of compare those offers to see where they're going to get the most bang for their buck. And then in regards to TOPS, because we administer TOPS and it's not awarded like through or by the institution, our eligibility window is a little bit later. So they'll get that award letter from their school early spring, but for TOPS, they'll get a separate notification from our office, and that's going to come over the summer. We start processing for TOPS in June.
Because, and the fog cleared, as you said that, Ebony, from 10 years ago, and I'm remembering now that, because a lot of times the universities or the colleges, whatever you call it, the institution of higher learning will have money available that people don't know about, right? Scholarships?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Usually every school has what we call institutional aid, and that's going to be financial aid from that school, and it's going to be specifically for those students. And even to go deeper than that, within the institution, you know, the College of Engineering will have scholarships specifically for engineering students at that school, or the School of Nursing. So it's really, you know, about this time, you know, early senior year, late junior year, we also advise students and parents to kind of start looking at scholarship searches and seeing what's out there to kind of start applying and making sure you're hitting any deadlines that they may have.
What's the, someone texted in about TOPS. Does TOPS increase the amount of semesters it contributes to more than 4 years, 8 semesters?
No. Right now, TOPS is still a four-year award for TOPS Opportunity Performance, TOPS Honors, and then TOPS Tech, of course, is still a two-year award. And so to date, there have been no changes to that. That would have to be something that would be legislatively changed.
TOPS, as I remember reading, at one time there was a problem funding it, but now it seems as though there's money left. People are not fully using this or not? Ebony, am I wrong?
No, we have seen, we have not had any issues this year with TOPS funding. And of course, there have been some declines in enrollment, which is, again, a reflection of a national trend. So for this year, TOPS is fully funded. And of course, we'll know going into next year over the summer after session, what TOPS, you know, what the what it'll look like for 25-26. But there has not been a budget shortfall for some time.
What is the reason for the national trend? Do they know?
Not quite sure, but they are seeing, you know, enrollment declines, and so they're not quite sure exactly where it's coming from, but kind of what's happening here in Louisiana is just kind of a reflection of a national kind of trend.
What I'm about to say here is a very, very general statement, but as an administrator of this, when you see so many people with so much college debt, do you kind of not? Does it make you think that maybe people don't realize all of the aid that is available, and that maybe they could? What kind of education is available if they avail themselves of the aid that is there, and that maybe they wouldn't have to incur a lot of this debt?
Yeah, and a lot of it is, you know, educating students and parents on their choices. Again, that match and fit. I usually advise students sometimes are like, I want to go out of state. And it's like, that's great, but have you looked at out-of-state fees?
Right.
That is going to be a huge part of the expenses that you're required to pay. And so one of the things that we try to do is kind of get them to, number one, what institutions are going to be a good fit for you academically. But even when you look at cost of choice, and you look at your options, kind of helping them navigate that whole college access process to be like, hey, you can go here and get a great education for X amount of dollars, or you can go here and get the same education for, you know, $10,000, $15,000 less. And really pushing the point home that if you're taking out student loans, this is not free money, right? We like to encourage use of free money and, you know, letting them know this money is going to have to be paid back, and it's going to have to be paid back with interest. So a lot of it is, hey, there may be aid here that you don't even realize you're eligible for. Doing the FAFSA could be the first step in, you know, gaining access to that money, and then also promoting that cost of choice so that they're able to make enabled and smart decisions about this is, you know, financially, this is my goal for matriculating through a post-secondary institution. Where can I get the most bang for my buck where I'm not paying, you know, hundreds of dollars every month to repay a student loan once I graduate?
And it seems like sometimes kids start touring schools and parents go with kids to tour schools. And it seemed to me, if I remember correctly, at the end of the presentation was, but first, of course, you got to decide what it is that you can afford. And it always seemed to me that should be at the beginning of it, where you should decide what kind of budget you have or what you're looking at student debt before you start going to North Carolina or California or New York or here or there, right? Because otherwise it's just kind of a wasted trip.
Correct. Because you're going to get that bill.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's going to be some surprise there. So that's certainly one of the things that we encourage them to look at, especially if, at this point, all of the post-secondary institutions are required to have a cost calculator on their website where they flat out tell you this is the tuition amount, you know, this is room and board. And so that empowers students and parents to go into it knowing, okay, this is, you know, how much it's going to cost if I go here. This is how much it's going to cost if I go here. And then once they get those financial aid packages, they're able to sit down and make a clear decision as far as, you know, this is how much I would be paying out of pocket at each of these institutions should I attend. And hopefully that kind of gives them the information that they need to make a decision that's right for their family.
Ebony, it can be eye-glazing. It really can for parents that are going through this.
Mm-hmm.
Is the first step going to the Louisiana Office of Student Financial? I had the window open here. MyLOSFA.LA.gov, that's the first step?
Absolutely. And we have both FAFSA guides, and we actually have a really great TOPS guide that we just rolled out that has all the information you could ever want to know about TOPS and then some, along with ways to reach us if you need to call us, if you need to set up a virtual office hour, if you need to email us. That's what we are here for. And if we have to hold your hand through the process, we are more than happy to get that done because we do understand that it can be confusing.
So one final question comes in. To qualify for TOPS, you have to fill out a FAFSA form, right?
They either have to do the FAFSA, or if they only want to apply for TOPS, they can just do the TOPS online application, and that's also going to be on that website that you just gave.
But you can get both, correct? you could get there. Yes. Could be eight available, and you could get tops as well.
Yes. So the FAFSA is going to be kind of like a catch-all. So that's right. Your application for federal aid, state aid, including TOPS, and some institutions use it as well. For students that only want to apply for TOPS and nothing else, they can do that TOPS online application.
I guess what I was trying to say in my own clumsy way is you never know, so why wouldn't you? Because
correct.
It's your money, right?
Yeah. You never know. Right, so we always say to be safe. Do the FAFSA, but, you know, again, we always leave that decision. We try to put the information in the hands of students and families to make informed decisions. And so if, you know, for whatever reason, they just want to apply for TOPS, they can. But we always encourage FAFSA.
I think everybody's in a holiday mode now, Ebony Holmes, but maybe you can come back after the first of the year and we'll revisit this. Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Ebony Holmes, Director of Public Information Advising for the Louisiana Office of Student Financial Assistance, or LOSFA. The form is FAFSA, and you can go to mylosfa.la.gov and find out more. 9:40, we'll talk Pels when we come back. Right now, it's time for traffic on WWL. All right, 9:48, 12 till 10. Tommy Tucker, WWL. Pelicans fans tonight. At 6, you can catch your Pels at the Grizzlies. Tip off at 6:30 on the Big 870 WWL AM. And then you'll have Sports Talk, of course, with the Saints Coaches Show with Darren Rizzi. That's on 105.3 FM WWL and the Odyssey app. And if you look at the first quarter of both the Pelicans and the Saints game yesterday, around the same time, they combined for a total of 13 points. Which is not good. Ollie Cosell joins us, credentialed NBA writer covering the Pelicans. How you doing, Ollie?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm glad you're making that analogy comparing the two teams, because it's turning out to be one disappointing season, right, for professional sports in New Orleans.
Yep. Tell me about, I don't know, we want to start with the Pelicans. Second worst record in the NBA, 4-17. It would be hard to imagine a start worse than this, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and for comparison's sake, I think a lot of people remember still Willie Green's inaugural year here 3-4 years ago, where the team started 3-16. But get this, Tommy, through 21 games, at least that team was 5-16, mm-hmm. right? So this version is one win worse. And everybody understands there's a slew of injuries. It's disrupted everything. But the problem is, it seems like now that their focus is going away, right? Last game, last night, they began the game with a turnover. Finished the first half on a turnover, began the second half with a turnover. And so we're seeing where they're alternating kind of close losses with really bad losses. And it's really just a lack of focus. They should be more competitive out there. And now, of course, that's weighing on everything else, right? Is Willie Green losing the team? What trades need to be made? Should you blow it up? I mean, we're talking about things that we shouldn't be talking about just a quarter of the season through.
You're pretty early on December 2nd be having that conversation. That's
yeah, without a doubt. But look, the Western Conference is so competitive that really, you know, they've dug them such a hole that just to get to, you've got to think they've got to get to at least about 500 to make the play-in tournament, right, to extend their season beyond the regular season. And that's looking like a tall order because, like I said, the Western Conference is a much tougher conference than, say, the East, where, you know, if they had this record over in the Eastern Conference, it'd be a lot less games to make up. So, it's understandable, right? There's about 61 games left, but, Tommy, it almost seems like everything has to go perfect the rest of the way, right? And here's the thing. Brandon Ingram's out day-to-day, and we don't know when he's going to return, but more importantly, Zion. You know, he had those PRP injections, and from what I understand, I talked to a few people, when you have those injections, you can't really run, not even run, right? No conditioning for at least 2 months. So his return is nowhere close, and if you don't have your stars, I don't know how they could make up all this ground.
I want to clean this up. They're playing the Hawks tonight, not the Grizzlies. I don't know why I said that. But tell me about the situation with B.I. He's signed a new deal or something, got a new agent or something. What's going on with him?
Yeah, Brandon Ingram moved on from his longtime agent over at Excel Sports. You know, he signed with him when he first entered the league, had a really good, from what I understand, relationship with him. But it makes sense, right? Brandon Ingram has been now seeking for a new contract for about a year. And the Pelicans, everybody assumed were going to either give him that contract this last summer or trade him. And they were not able to accomplish either one. And so Brandon Ingram's thinking he's probably going to have better luck with a different agency. And as I think a lot of people know, he's now moved on to Rich Paul of Clutch Sports. That's the person who represented Anthony Davis, got him out of New Orleans. And so, yeah, it looks like the Brandon Ingram's time here in New Orleans is probably going to come to a conclusion real soon.
How much of a disaster is this? How much of a Titanic is this Pelicans team right now in this organization?
Well, everybody, first of all, gets blamed. Usually, yeah, you can point to a really bad front office decision, sometimes a player being out, a coach, right, mismanaging the roster. But it's just been a combination of everything. So, really, it's an organizational failure from top to bottom. But I'm mainly looking a lot at the players, right? Your top six players have to be healthy. Mm-hmm. And this is not just a problem with the Pelicans, but if you notice, there's been so many injuries across the league, and they propped up in the first couple of weeks, right? And here's the problem. Players just aren't taking, you know, the professional – seeking all the professional ways to keep their bodies healthy, right? You're entering a season where you're kind of running at half speed, and all of a sudden you're going from playing one or two preseason games in about 2 to 3 weeks, and all of a sudden you're playing four regular season games per week. And from talking to every previous NBA player, a lot of trainers, they say that load, these players can't sustain it anymore, right? In the past, Tommy, practices in preseason used to consist of two-a-days for 2 weeks. You were basically running up and down the court and puking your guts out, right, getting in shape. They don't do anything like that anymore.
Is that because of collective bargaining, or is that because of...
No, honestly, it has nothing to do with collective bargaining. It's just the way players now honestly just approach the game. They honestly do not put in enough effort anymore on that end. They just think they can get in shape during the season. And some players can, but there's a lot that can't.
And they get paid either way.
Right. They don't look at it as an 82-game schedule, Tommy. They really don't. And look, all you have to do is just look at the NBA awards, right, all the major ones. You just have to play 65 games. So it's almost as though the NBA signed off, here, you can at least miss 17 games, and you're fine. So, yeah, there's just bad messaging all around, but the league is in a bit of a trouble. They've really got to fix this.
Thank you. I appreciate the insights. Ollie Cosell, credentialed NBA writer covering the Pelicans. Man, I think we need to get some kind of voodoo ceremony, something over there on Airline Drive with the injuries and everything else. 9:54, 6 till 10. We'll find out what Noel's got planned for us when we come back on WWL.